second edition. This month's theme is the heart of the matter. Let's be honest. Romance is difficult. Relationships are difficult. Trying to estimate the resale value of a personal pleasure device once you no longer have a use for it. I don't have any personal experience, but I'm guessing also difficult. Which brings us to the first of our two featured works this month. A flash fiction piece by John Giozio called Ackerman is Selling His Sex Chair for $10.
It's a garage sale, and Ackerman is selling his sex chair for $10. It dangles from a beam in his garage. Underneath it, there's a set of cross-country skis and a bread maker. The sex chair is brown leather. I check the tag. It's Swedish, very high quality. I inspect the various fucking holes. It's in great shape, gently used. That's price to sell, Ackerman yells to me from across his garage. I had a weekly thing with Ackerman's wife, Elaine, before she died. Every Tuesday night, we met up at a motel and screwed. She kept telling me that she was going to leave Ackerman, but in the end, she never did. One Tuesday, Elaine didn't show up at the motel, and when I drove by her house, I saw a hearse and a bunch of people dressed in black. What happened? I asked one of the kids standing in her yard. Aunt Elaine crashed her car, he told me. There are a couple of other people roaming around in Ackerman's garage, too. There's a young girl flipping through his record collection. There's an old dude making a racket as he roots around in a box of tools. Ackerman's middle-aged, not much older than me. He's way too young to have lost a wife, but maybe too old and too sad to look for another one. That chair is going to go quick, he tells me. I wouldn't dilly-dally. He's right. There's a blonde guy eyeing it. I look at the blonde guy, and I can tell exactly what he's thinking. He's thinking about the chair's possibilities. He's thinking about where he could mount it in his house, who he could talk into using it. He's not thinking what I'm thinking. How I miss Elaine so damn much that I stopped by her husband's garage sale so I could buy something that she once sat in or touched or that still held the scent of her shampoo. Before this guy pulls out his wallet, I walk over and pluck the price tag off the chair and hand Ackerman my money. Sold, he says. Sold, I say. I stand there while Ackerman pulls the chair down from the rafters. Everyone else is gone. It's just me and him standing in his garage. Grief isn't a contest, but suddenly I want it to be. I want someone to invent a grief testing machine and then hook both of us up to it so I can show Ackerman that I miss his wife way more than he does. You're really going to enjoy this chair, he tells me, folding it up and placing it in my hands. What a normal person does now is says, thank you very much. What a normal person does now is tucks the chair under their arm and walks to their car. This is not what I do. Now that I'm here, I realize how badly I want to get inside his house to see what things of Elaine's I'm missing out on. The only way I can figure out how to do this is to pretend to faint. And so that's what I do. I let my eyes roll back in my head, and I make my legs go slack, and down I go. Oh, shit, Ackerman says. After I count to 20, I open my eyes, and Ackerman helps me to my feet. Let's get you somewhere cool, he tells me. Yes, I say to him, let's. I sit on his couch and eat an apple and drink a glass of water. I assure Ackerman that I'm fine, that this happens to me every once in a while. Low blood sugar, I tell him. He fills up my glass of water again and I down it. Lately, I've been listening to a lot of talk radio for company. I don't care what the topic is, sports or gardening or politics. I'm just really scared of it being quiet. I want to ask Ackerman what he does to fill up the silence now, how he copes. But I don't want him to realize I'm anything other than a random garage sale pervert. "Nice house you have," I tell him. "You want to see the rest of it?" he asks. "I'd love to," I say. The last time I shoplifted anything was in high school, but each room we walk through now, I pocket something. A 5x7 black and white of Elaine, some magnets from the fridge, a dart from the rec room. When Ackerman excuses himself to go to the bathroom, I slide into his bedroom and shove a handful of Elaine's panties into my pants pocket. I shake his hand when I leave. "I'm sorry about before," I tell him. "No problem at all," he says. When I get home, I mount a hook to the ceiling of my front porch and hang the sex chair there. I find a small table and set up a few candles in my picture of Elaine. Lately now, before I go to work, I sit there and read the newspaper. The chair is actually pretty comfortable. It gives good lumbar support. Usually while I'm sitting there at this little shrine, my mailman Carl comes by with the mail. Carl's a smart guy, knows what's what. Some mornings I invite him inside for a cup of coffee and we chat. Other mornings, when I'm sitting in my sex chair wiping my tears away with a pair of Elaine's panties, Carl doesn't judge. Those mornings, Carl just gives me a wave and then he keeps on moving, moving right down my block.
John Jozio is the author of two short story collections, 2010's If You Lived Here, You'd Already Be Home, and 2011's Get In If You Want to Live. This being only our second edition of the podcast, it's probably not occurred to you to wonder why we don't have corporate sponsorship. Well, I assure you it has nothing to do with personal or artistic integrity on my part. I would be the first to cash in if the opportunity presented itself. I'm not doing this for my health. Our second featured piece for this edition is by Sam Landman and Matthew Glover.
Okay, let's try this again. Jet lag serial, take 7. Atmosphere and action.
Hi, I'm Jetlag, Steelville's rocket-propelled crime fighter. You know, fighting crime isn't easy, especially when you have a 200-pound accelerator strapped to your back. But you want to know my little secret? Jetlag cereal. I eat it every single day before I hit those mean streets, because it's packed with the essential vitamins and minerals that keep this crime fighter at the top of his game. So if you want to be like Jetlag, try Jetlag cereal. It's the only I'm sorry, can we stop this, please, Kyle?
Cut!
Yeah, I'm sorry. Harry? Where's Harry?
Man,
Harry?
He's going really long.
Where is he?
Still got that Freedom Community Press meeting.
Harry!
Shit. Let me call you back.
Harry!
Yeah, I'm here, Jet. Like, what's the problem?
I don't think I can stomach this anymore.
It was a Thai food, right? I told Joyce to get cold cuts for the shoot, but does she listen?
No. It's not that. I mean, let's face it, it was too spicy, but it's not that.
Well, then what is it?
I'm sorry, but I cannot, with good conscience, be a spokesman for this product. I'm sorry, I can't do it.
Fellas, we're going to take 10. Okay, Kyle, we'll be right back.
All right, that's 10, everybody.
Let's go get some air. All right, now what's up?
Did you know that this cereal was made in Budapest?
No, is that a problem?
Are you kidding me, Harry? Do you know why you've never eaten cereal from Budapest?
No.
Because Budapest isn't known for its cereal. It's known for filthy elephants and poor people.
Glenn, where the hell is this going?
I just don't think I should endorse a cereal that causes kids to shit and piss weird colors, that's all.
Whoa, what? What are you talking about?
Harry, I ate a bowl of Jet-like cereal the other night, and besides being the most flavorless thing I've ever put in my mouth, this morning, my bowel movement was green, and my urine was a disturbing shade of blue.
You're kidding, right? You're fucking with me.
No, I've got the samples in my car.
Wait. You have stool and urine samples in your car.
They're in Tupperware, yeah. You want to come and see him?
No, I don't.
Honestly, I was going to bring him into the chute this morning and throw him in the client's face.
Okay, Glenn, let's back up for a minute here. You are not going to fling your own excrement at the client today. And you want to know why? Because they're not paying you to give them E. coli. They're paying you, a young, up-and-coming crime fighter who can connect with millions of kids, to endorse a product with your name and likeness all over it. And at this point in the game, regardless of your stance, you've got to play ball. You're the face on that cereal box. And you know what that box represents? A 100% binding contract. A contract you willingly signed and made hundreds of thousands off already. With even more money to come once the mini site, the Facebook tab, the print, and the radio spots are all done. So don't get me wrong. I appreciate that you've suddenly grown a social conscience. I do. But you're about a day late and a dollar fucking short.
I see what you're saying, Harry, but I just don't know anymore. I'm just not feeling this.
Glenn, this happens all the time. I mean, by the time the FDA get their hands on it and kids start getting sick, sure, it'll be a bloodbath. But that'll be a tiny speed bump by the time the check's clear. And I can tell you, this kind of money always makes up for bad press. I mean, in this revved up society, do you actually think anybody's going to remember the shitty things you did within 6 months or a year? Hell, look at Martha Stewart or Tiger Woods.
But it's not just the cereal, okay? It's this whole endorsement thing. I'm sick of it. I feel like a corporate shill.
All right. Let me ask you a question. Do you consider the Bounder a corporate shill?
Hell no. He's the reason I got into crime fighting in the first place.
Well, let me let you in on a little secret. When my grandfather started Deerdorf & Associates, Bounder was his first client.
Shut up. Bounder never sold out.
Of course he did. He took Granddaddy's business into a whole new realm. Basically made it what it is today. Hey, Bounder pimped Warhorse cigarettes, talcum powder, cod liver oil, you name it. I'm setting up Bounder with an adult diaper company next week. I mean, the man's still got to eat, right? And while he's alive, why not use his likeness to steer the greatest generation to a product they can actually use? Think of it this way. You're not a shill if you're boosting a sagging economy. The way I see it, it's a means to a very, very profitable end.
Okay, I feel you. But what if I'm endorsing a product that I know is harmful to people? What then?
Listen, it's not my job to debate ethical ramifications. It's my job to get that all-American little face into the public's consciousness. And I'm doing that. And even if jet-lag cereal causes one kid to grow a third arm, it won't matter. Because this rinky-dink cereal is simply a gateway to better-known, more profitable endorsements in the long run. And that is what we're talking about here. The long run. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I hear you.
So we're cool.
Yeah. You know, thanks, Harry, for breaking it down for me.
Well, that's my job, isn't it? Wait a minute, Glenn. Wait. Before we go back in, can I give you a little advice? A, smile more. Makes you more approachable. Plus, you've got killer dimples. And B, stop listening to your fucking girlfriend. She's filling your head with that tree hugger bullshit. Was it her idea to put the turds in Tupperware?
No, that was all mine. She wanted to use Ziplocs.
Fair enough. Okay, Kyle, we're back.
All right, we're back, people. Okay, jet lag cereal, take 8. Atmosphere and action.
Sam Landman and Matthew Glover are also known as the Twin Cities comedy duo Palmer Horse Productions. Thanks for listening to this edition of You Are Here. Our editorial calendar, submission guidelines, and previous editions are available anytime at mnartists.org. You Are Here is a monthly literary podcast production of mnartists.org. MNArtist.org is a joint project of the Walker Art Center and the McKnight Foundation. The mission of MNArtist.org is to improve the lives of Minnesota artists and provide access to and engagement with Minnesota's arts culture.